Well, as we heard yesterday here on Breakfast, the new Special Minister of State, Mal Brough, is making it a priority to reform the voting system for the Senate.
The system worked quite well. It's now been gamed. We've seen it for what it is, where you have hard left, people of the hard left, for argument's sake, inadvertently having their vote cast in such a way that it elects a hard right and vice versa, which is totally against what they actually wished to do. I mean, I think you'd find some people horrified to learn that that their vote actually ended up where it did, on both sides of this equation. So give them some confidence, and that actually strengthens our democracy longer term, rather than what is the short-term political gain for any particular political party.
That's the Special Minister of State, Mal Brough, speaking on this program yesterday. Those comments, though, haven't gone down all that well, to say the least, with some of the crossbenchers in the upper house. Senator Ricky Muir is a senator for the Australian Motoring Enthusiast Party. Ricky Muir, welcome to RN Breakfast.
Good morning, Grant. Thank you.
Has Malcolm Turnbull or anyone from the government been in touch with you since Mal Brough spoke out yesterday on this program about the need to reform the Senate voting system?
No, I haven't personally received any calls or had any contact, but I was reading in the headlines this morning that a couple of people may have been contacted.
Are you troubled by those comments? What's your reaction to them?
Yeah, look, I was, and I remain troubled by those comments. I don't think electoral reform really does need to happen. The electoral system has been in consideration and has been tinkered with over time, mainly to the benefit of the major parties. And now that the voting public's actually voting somewhere, looking for an alternative, it's not necessarily suiting them as much as what they would like, and the discussion around reform's happening. And it does worry me a great deal.
I can understand why it would trouble someone in your position, because you got elected with a tiny proportion of the vote, and I'll come back to that. But is there a structural problem when you think that in New South Wales and Victoria, when someone goes into the ballot box, sometimes the voting papers for the Senate are more than a metre long, and an individual has just two choices. They can vote one above the line, or they can vote every single number in that metre, more than a metre long ballot paper. If they vote above the line, they get absolutely no say in where their preferences go. It is dysfunctional to that degree, isn't it?
Look, there is definitely a degree of, if somebody does want to actually have full control over their preference, there is that degree of difficulties, especially if the ballot papers are a metre long. I don't disagree with that at all. But I think an absolute change of the system or a dramatic change of the system is not necessarily the right answer. I think if the government of the day or the major parties were representing the will of the people to the extent where the people were happy, they wouldn't be voting elsewhere in the first place.
Well, I can see why you argue that the population keeps ticking the boxes for a number of different smaller parties. But a lot of the people, as Mal Brough was saying, they don't know what they're doing. Let me give you an example. In 2004, in Victoria, Labor and Democrat preferences went to Family First ahead of the Greens. Probably not what a lot of those Labor or Democrat voters would have expected or wanted. So Steve Fielding became elected. In your own case, you got elected with the preferences from the Sex Party, for instance, from the DLP, from Animal Justice, from Help End Marijuana Prohibition, not necessarily groups that would have wanted to vote for the Motoring Enthusiast Party. Fair to say?
Oddly enough, a lot of people I speak to in the rural area where I'm from, down in Gippsland, vote Nationals for an alternative to the Liberals, not realising that they're joined at the hip.
Yeah, but do you accept that a lot of those preferences that got you voted in, and remember you got voted in with a record low primary vote of just 0.51%, the 17,000 first preferences, that a lot of those people whose votes helped get you elected would never have dreamt of electing a motor enthusiast party?
I do agree with that. Yeah, there was probably a lot of people who were definitely, not probably, there was a lot of people who were definitely shocked. Who's this bloke? Where is he? But I think it's wrong to presume that if somebody voted for the Sex Party, then they would have just been happy to accept one of the major parties get in. They did vote for an alternative, and the Senate results in 2013 did reflect that. Not completely proportionate, though. There should actually be a couple more independents in.
So you're saying that people wanted to vote for a minor party, they might not just have got the minor party that they, the crossbencher they were voting for?
Correct. They were looking for an alternative, and an alternative they did get.
Senator Brough's position is that the system's been gamed, and if you can straighten it out, it'll put more confidence in the whole in our democracy, in our voting system. One of the solutions being proposed is partial optional preferential voting, so voters can allocate some preferences above the line, at least as many as there are positions to be filled, without having to fill in the whole metre-long paper. Is that a good idea?
In theory, it does sound really good. I fear for a minor party to then be able to compete and get their message out there, that they're going to have to then rely on donor money to really run a good campaign, and then we're going to be stuck with the same old problem we're stuck with now, and that is...
You're going to get outspent.
...to the donor.
and that you'll be outspent, is that your fear?
Yeah, of course, that would happen. There's no doubt about that.
What about the other idea that was floated after the last election when, in particular, citing you, who got in on primary votes of just 17,122 first preferences, that a minimum vote threshold should be put in place for someone to get elected? Does that make sense, to have a base level of support in the community before you can be elected to the Senate?
I've been pretty objective to the whole idea of any reform, just because this system has been to the benefit of the major party. The major party swapped their preference, Greens preference, Labor preference, Greens, however it may work. And now that the voting public are looking elsewhere, like I said earlier on, they're not happy with it. So I don't think any change at all is necessary. But if there is any change, I think there needs to be a way to balance out the ability for minor parties and micro parties to be able to get their message out. So how that change may look, I don't know, but I certainly won't be encouraging the government to go to the table with any electoral reform at all.
It's 17 to 8. Our guest is Ricky Muir, Senator Ricky Muir from the Australian Motoring Enthusiast Party. He's a crossbencher in the Senate. If the government presses ahead with changes to Senate voting, will that affect how you vote on government legislation that's coming in? Because David Lionhelm says he'll basically declare war on the government's legislative agenda.
Look, a knee-jerk reaction in my case would be to completely agree with that, but I know my role isn't just a privilege, it's a huge responsibility, and if there's reform coming through or a legislative agenda coming through, that's important, would be to the benefit of Australia, to the benefit of the people of Australia. It would be irresponsible just to go into a protest vote and not allow it to pass. So I'll take everything on its merits. If I was to work with the government and allow them to get some of the legislative agenda through, then that would put the electoral reform through and I'll also lose my position. Well, so be it. I'll go back to a sawmill.
There are signs the government's prepared. Just talk about one of the legislative, part of the legislative reform. The government's looking at revising its higher education reforms. You've been one of the crossbenchers blocking the higher ed bill so far. What would it take to get your vote on this?
That's actually a pretty good example. I'll tackle that slightly different, and that is the importance of the crossbench, because a good chunk of Australia were completely opposed to these reforms, and if the diverse Senate crossbench wasn't there, they would have passed. The government would have had the majority and they would have passed, much to the detriment of the Australian people. So that's an important reason.
Ricky, I'm just going to stop you there because the phone's messing up a bit. I don't know if you can move slightly, but just try and move a bit and then say that again.
Sorry, how's that?
Yeah, I think your battery might be going on. Just see if you can finish that answer and we'll say goodbye.
Okay, no problems at all. So I was just pointing out the importance of the Senate crossbench. If the government had the majority, if micro parties, minor parties weren't elected, something like education reform would have gone through, much to the detriment of the Australian people who really did not want it.
Senator Muir, we're going to move it there. Glad to leave it there. I think your battery might be dying, but thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Frank.
Senator Ricky Muir from the Australian Motoring Enthusiast Party.